First Samuel chapter 2 is where we stopped last time. In chapter 1, of course, we saw the record of Hannah and how she goes to the tabernacle in Shiloh, and Eli accuses her of being drunk, and she says, "No, I'm a woman of a sorrowful spirit." And then he says, "Well, God grant you the petition." And then the very next year she has a son, and she gives that son, she dedicates that young baby to God for his whole life. She raises him as a Nazirite. And it's kind of interesting. We went through it last week. There are five births, miraculous births to women that were barren. And three of them were Nazirites. Samson, Samuel, and John the Baptist. So it's quite an interesting thing. And of course, a Nazirite was one that didn't drink alcohol or eat certain foods and didn't cut his hair. Not good news for the barber. Anyway, we're going to start in chapter 2, and the first 10 verses are a prayer of thanksgiving from Hannah. And it doesn't really pertain to our subject per se, but it is such a wonderful and sweet prayer. And so verse 1, it says, "And Hannah prayed and said, My heart rejoiceth in the Lord. Mine horn is exalted in the Lord. My mouth is enlarged over mine enemies because I rejoice in thy salvation." And of course, her salvation was that she had a child because she was barren to that point, which in that culture was looked upon as a curse. And it says, "There is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside me. Neither is there any rock like our God. Talk no more so exceeding proudly. Let not arrogancy come out of your mouth. For the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. The bows of the mighty men are broken, and they that stumbled are girded with strength. They that were full have hired out themselves for bread, and they that were hungry ceased, so that the barren hath borne 7, and she that hath many children is waxed feeble. The Lord killeth, and the Lord maketh alive. He bringeth down to the grave and bringeth up. The Lord maketh poor and maketh rich. He bringeth low and lifteth up. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust, and he lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill to set them among the princes and to make them inherit the throne of glory, for the pillars of the earth are the Lord's, and he hath set the world upon him." It's an interesting verse. It says, "He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill." And I looked this up. Bishop Pillay, or Pillay, however you want to say it, he talked about this verse. He said a dunghill is not what you think. And I looked up the word dung and dunghill. And there's one word that means excrement. But then other words... the other words for dung mean trash or garbage or to throw out. And what he said here is the word dunghill means like a garbage heap. So, you know, the beggar, it's, you know, he goes dumpster diving, basically. Mm-hmm. Right? That's what he's talking about there. He raiseth up the poor out of the dust and lifteth up the beggar from the dunghill. He doesn't have to dive anymore. He's going to take care of him and provide for him. What a great mind picture. "He will keep the feet of his saints, and the wicked shall be silent in darkness, for by strength shall no man prevail. The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken to pieces. Out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." Wow, what a great prayer, huh? So... "The adversaries of the Lord shall be broken, and out of heaven shall he thunder upon them. The Lord shall judge the ends of the earth, and he shall give strength unto his king and exalt the horn of his anointed." So, verse 11, and Elkanah went to Ramah, to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli, the priest. And I want you to notice there, it says, he served the Lord. You know, he ministered means served. He served the Lord before Eli. When I first looked at it, I was going to write down, he served Eli. But he didn't serve Eli. He served the Lord. But he was under the tutelage of Eli. You know, his that was his earthly boss, but he served God. I want you to go to Hebrews. I want to look at a couple of verses. So hold your place here, chapter 2. And I want you to go to Hebrews chapter 11. We read this before, last week, I believe, but Hebrews 11, verse 32. It says, and what shall I more say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and of Barak and of Samson and of Jephthah, of David also and Samuel and of the prophets. You know, he talked about different people previous to this and gave a little synopsis of their lives. But then all these guys that were during this period of time, you know, the judges and then David with the connection to Samuel, he puts them all together. As great believers who through faith endured, who through faith subdued kingdoms, wrought righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions, and goes on and on and on. So that's pretty cool. Now let's go to Acts chapter 3. Chapter 3, verse 22. It says, for Moses truly said unto the fathers, a prophet shall the Lord your God raise up unto you of your brethren, like unto me. Him shall ye hear in all things whatsoever he shall say unto you. And that's not really what I wanted, and I don't know why I'm there. Oh, 22, keep going. And it shall come to pass that every soul which shall not hear that prophet shall be destroyed from among the people. Yea, and all the prophets from Samuel and to those that follow after, as many as have spoken, have likewise foretold of these days. And this is when? It's the day of Pentecost, right? This is when he was speaking on the day of Pentecost, and or right after, shortly after, during that period when they had healed the man at the temple gate. But he said that starting with Samuel, from Samuel, the beginning, and those that follow after, as many as have spoken, likewise have foretold these days. Now, it may not all be written down in the word what they spoke of those days, but they spoke of them. Now, some of it may have been written down, right? As we'll see places where it was written down. They foretold of the Messiah and things like that. But it was definitely spoken. Now let's go to chapter 13 of Acts. So Samuel is like a jumping off point in some ways for the prophets. Chapter 13, verse 20. And after that he gave unto them judges about the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. And afterward they desired a king, and God gave them Saul, the son of Cis, a man of the tribe of Benjamin, by the space of 40 years. So here again, Samuel's spoken of in the book of Acts, and having to do with the time that they asked for a king, which we're going to see some of that tonight. And let's go to Jeremiah 15. Jeremiah 15 and verse 1. Then said the Lord unto me, though Moses and Samuel stood before me, yet my mind could not be toward this people. Cast them out of my sight and let them go forth. Here he is matched up with Moses because he made intercession for the people as Moses did. You know, and that was a big part of of what Moses did. How many times did God say, I'm getting rid of these people. I'm starting over with you, Moses, or I'm done with these guys. And Moses would go up on the mountain for 40 days, not eat, fast and pray and beseech God. And we'll see that Samuel was like that. He would just go to God and say, okay, God, we got to turn this around here. So he was one that intercessed. He stood before God as Moses, which is a great thing, isn't it? It's just, and we're going to see that in 1 Samuel chapter 7. And let's go to Psalm 99. Psalm 99. Doesn't say who this psalm is, but it says in verse 1, the Lord reigneth, let the people tremble. He sitteth between the cherubims, let the earth be moved. The Lord is great in Zion, he is high above all the people. Let them praise thy great and terrible name, for it is holy. The king's strength also loveth judgment. Thou dost establish equity, thou executest judgment and righteousness in Jacob, which would be Israel. Exalt ye the Lord our God and worship at his footstool, for he is holy. Moses and Aaron among his priests, and Samuel among them that call upon his name, they called upon the Lord, and he answered them. So here he's equated with Moses and Aaron. And as we'll see, Samuel was of the line of Aaron, or at least a Levite. In 1 Chronicles 6, it gives the lineage of Levi from Moses and Aaron and of the line of the Levites through Samuel. So I'm not sure if he was in the line of Aaron, but he was definitely a Levite. And the book of Samuel was written, and it was written by Samuel and later Nathan and Gad. That's who wrote the book, as far as we know. So if you go to 1 Chronicles 29, and verse 29, which I believe is the last verse in the book. Next to last, sorry. Now the acts of David the king, first and last, behold, they are written in the book of Samuel the seer, and in the book of Nathan the prophets, and in the book of Gad the seer. And the word seer means, that's what they called a prophet in the early days. So, and then later on, Nathan was a prophet. So, David the king, and all it was written in the book of Samuel was written by. Now, if you were to go to the Septuagint, they don't have a book of Samuel. It's 1 Kings, and then 2 Kings, then 3 Kings, 4 Kings, and I'm not sure what Chronicles is. It might be Kings also. But there is no Samuel. It's 1st, 2nd, 3rd, and 4th Kings. Okay? So, back to Samuel, and I want to go to chapter 10. 10 and verse 25. It says, then Samuel told the people the manner of the kingdom and wrote it in a book and laid it up before the Lord. And Samuel sent all the people away, every man to his house. So here it says he wrote. So he definitely wrote a lot of this book. So back to chapter 2. And we'll get into the meat of what's going on with Samuel. But I just wanted you to see a little background and understand the greatness of Samuel, where he sits in the Bible. He was definitely a tremendous guy. So, verse 12. Well, we read verse 11. Elkanah went to Ramah to his house, and the child did minister unto the Lord before Eli the priest. Now the sons of Eli were of Belial, which means what?
Worthless.
They were sold out to the devil. They were evil guys. They knew not the Lord. They didn't know God. They were raised in the house of Eli. Eli was the high priest. He lived in Shiloh. He was the one that was in charge of the tabernacle. And they didn't know God. That's almost unbelievable, isn't it? Now, did they know about Jehovah? Well, they heard it. But what it meant, they didn't believe. They just thought it was junk. And the priest's custom with the people was that when any man offered sacrifice, the priest's servant came, and while the flesh was in seething with a flesh hook of three teeth in his hand, and he stuck it into the pan or the kettle or cauldron or pot, all that the flesh hook brought up, the priest took for himself. So they did in Shiloh unto all the Israelites that came thither. So part of the way that God supported the priesthood was when people came to do sacrifices, the priest would get a cut. He would get his portion. And that's how they did it, with a meat hook, of all things. Also, before they burnt the fat, the priest's servant came and said to the man that sacrificed, "Give flesh to the roast for the priest, for he will not have sodden flesh of thee, but raw." Now, this is where his sons are going, because they're taking advantage of the people. "And if any man said unto him, let them not fail to burn the fat presently, and then take as much as thy soul desireth, then he would answer him, Nay, but thou shalt give it to me now, and if not, I will take it by force." So these guys were not nice guys. They were taking more than what they were supposed to take, and they were taking it not the way they were supposed to take it. They were coercing people. They were forcing people. "Wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord." They abhorred it. What a terrible thing. So these guys were corrupt. They coerced people and took from them stuff that they were not entitled to. Verse 18. "But in contrast to the evil of his sons, Samuel ministered before the Lord, being a child girded with the linen ephod." And the linen ephod was like a tunic, and it was worn by the priests. It was made out of linen because it was against the skin. But the high priest would wear a fancy one, which was embroidered with gold and jewels and all kinds of stuff. But he wore the simple tunic of linen as opposed to the high priest. So it's, you know, goes through all that evil stuff and says, but here's Samuel, this child. Yeah, it really means a young man. You know, this goes on for a period of time and he's growing up in that place. So, "moreover, his mother made him a little coat and brought it to him from year to year when she came up with her husband to offer the yearly sacrifice." And his mom and dad were just faithful, faithful people. And she would, you know, he was growing, so he needed new clothes every year, right? "And Eli blessed Elkanah and his wife and said, the Lord give thee seed of this woman for the loan which is lent to the Lord. And they went unto their own home. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived and bare three sons and two daughters, and the child Samuel grew before the Lord." So, you know, she was barren, she had a child, and she gave it to God. So this is a great example of giving and receiving, right? Mm-hmm. And she just put her whole heart into giving him to God, no strings attached, and God gave her
five more
kids. She might have wanted to take them back after that. I don't know. Anyway, just kidding. Because back in those days, you know, the number of children was like a sign of wealth. And it was a blessing to have many kids. "And the child Samuel grew before the Lord." And that doesn't just mean physically, but what? In his understanding and his spirituality. "Now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how they lay with women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So what they were doing is they were taking advantage of women sexually at the door of the tabernacle. They had a lot of nerve. They would, basically rape women that came to sacrifice. And people were afraid to confront them. Why? Because they were, they were hot shots. And he said unto them, "Why do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. Ye make the Lord's people to transgress." So Eli confronts them, but not very strongly. "If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them." I should have looked up a different translation of that.
Mine says, "But they would not listen to the voice of their father, for it was the will of the Lord to put them to death."
Okay. Did you hear that out there in television land? Okay. So, because the Lord would slay them, he wanted to put them to death. They deserved the death penalty for what they were doing. "And the child Samuel grew on and was in favor both with the Lord and also with men." So this young man, Samuel, is growing up and he's doing what he's supposed to do. And people love him because he's obeying and he's doing his best for God. "And there came a man of God." Now, this is a man of God. We're studying men of God, right? And this guy comes out of nowhere. We don't know his name. He's unnamed. But God sent him, right? "A man of God unto Eli and said unto him, thus saith the Lord." Well, that pretty much puts it in pretty clear words, right? "Thus saith the Lord, I'm coming here because God told me to tell you. Did I plainly appear unto the house of thy father when they were in Egypt in Pharaoh's house? And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to offer upon my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And did I give unto the house of thy father all the offerings made by fire of the children of Israel?" He's saying, look, I called you out. You know, you're of the line of Aaron, and you got a special job to do. And I gave you all these benefits. You get to minister before me, and I made sure that you're taken care of. "Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before..." Whoops, did I?
Verse 29.
Oh, sorry. Okay. You're right. Verse 29. "Wherefore kick ye at my sacrifice and at my offering, which I have commanded in my habitation, and honorest thy sons above me, to make yourselves fat with the chiefest of all the offerings of Israel, my people." So what's he saying to Eli? You know, you didn't really stop them from doing this. That was your responsibility. So you put your sons ahead of me. That's a pretty heavy reproof. Verse 30. "Wherefore the Lord God of Israel saith, I said indeed that thy house and the house of thy father should walk before me forever. But now the Lord saith, be it far from me, for them that honor me will I will honor, and they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off thine arm and the arm of thy father's house, that there shall not be an old man in thine house." In other words, I'm cutting off this family line. It's done. You're not going to have grandchildren and great-grandchildren and whatever there is. They're not going to get very far in life. "And thou shalt see an enemy in my habitation, in all the wealth which God shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in thine house forever." That's a long time. I mean, there's no going back here. and the man of thine, whom I shall not cut off from mine altar, shall be to consume thine eyes and grieve thine heart, and all the increase of thine house shall die in the flower of their age. He says, basically saying the same thing three different ways, so that he understands. But when he says it that many times, it's established. He's not going to change his mind. And this shall be a sign unto thee that shall come upon thy two sons, on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. And I'll raise me up a faithful priest that shall do according to that which is in mine heart and in my mind, and I will build him a sure house, and he shall walk before mine anointed forever. Okay. That seems to be a messianic prophecy, right? Because who is the great high priest?
Jesus
Christ. And I will build him a sure, and he will walk before my anointed forever. And it shall come to pass that every one that is left in thine house shall come and crouch to him for a piece of silver and a morsel of bread. And they shall say, put me, I pray thee, into the priest offices that I may eat a piece of bread. Mm-hmm. Meaning, you're going to starve. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get there. So, it's pretty wild. God's judgment comes upon him, and it's just. You know, people could look at it and say, well, that's really harsh. Well, no, it's not, because God is a just and merciful God, and if he made that judgment, it has to be the right judgment. It has to be a fair judgment. It has to be a just judgment, because God is just. Chapter 3. And the child Samuel ministered unto the Lord before Eli. It's the second time that says that, right? Or the third time, I'm not sure. But that's that's what he was doing. He through all this chaos and all these corruption and perversions, he's focused on serving God before Eli. And he's just continuing to grow in the word and spiritually before God. And the word of the Lord was precious in those days. There was no open vision. And that means the word was precious means it was rare. Eli was no longer receiving information from God because God cut him off. You know, he had spirit upon him and God took that spirit away. And it came to pass at that time when Eli was laid down in his place and his eyes began to wax dim that he could not see. He was starting to lose his vision. He was getting hazy. He was very old. And before the lamp of God went out in the temple of the Lord, where the ark of God was, and Samuel was laid down to sleep, that the Lord called Samuel, and he answered and said, here am I. And he ran into Eli and said, here am I, for thou callest me. And he said, I called not, lie down again. And he went and lay down. So God calls Samuel. He thinks it's Eli. He gets up out of his bed, runs into Eli, says, here I am. And Eli says, I didn't call you. Go back to bed. Verse 6, and the Lord called yet again, Samuel. And Samuel arose and went to Eli and said, here am I. For thou didst call me, and he answered, I called not, my son, lie down again. Now Samuel did not yet know the Lord, neither was the word of the Lord yet revealed unto him. He had not learned how to receive revelation yet. He didn't recognize the voice of God. And the Lord called Samuel again, the third time, and he arose and went to Eli and said, here am I, for thou didst call me. And Eli perceived that the Lord had called the child. Therefore Eli said unto Samuel, go, lie down, and it shall be, if he shall call thee, that thou shalt say, speak, Lord, for thy servant heareth. So Samuel went and lay down in his place. So here Eli is saying, okay, this is what you got to do. This is God talking to you. So say, okay, Lord, your servant heareth. I'm ready to listen. How cool. And the Lord came and stood and called as at other times, Samuel, Samuel. Then Samuel answered, speak, for thy servant heareth. How thrilling must that have been for that young boy? You know, it's like the first time you speak in tongues, right? How great. And it's in the nighttime, you know. Nice quiet time. There's nothing to distract. God's smart like that. And the Lord said to Samuel, behold, I will do a thing in Israel, at which both the ears of everyone that heareth it shall tingle. In that day I will perform against Eli all things which I have spoken concerning his house. When I begin, I will also make an end. You know, Eli didn't listen to God, didn't go back and put it to his son, so then God went to Samuel. For I have told him that I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knoweth, because his sons made themselves vile, and he restrained them not. I had a thing here. This is the heart of Samuel's transgression. The King James says, because his sons made themselves vile. The Septuagint reads, because his sons spoke evil against God. Or they cursed God. And Samuel let him get away with it.
Eli.
Eli let him get away with it. You know, Eli is supposed to be the man of God. He was a man of God. He judged Israel for 40 years. He received revelation. But when his sons did that, he didn't stop them. They cursed God. What a terrible thing. And he let them get away with it. He didn't stop them. He didn't speak up. Verse 14. He didn't restrain them. And therefore I have sworn unto the house of Eli that the iniquity of Eli's house shall not be purged with sacrifice nor offering forever. You know, they can't do a sacrifice big enough to get him out of this jam. And Samuel lay until the morning and opened the doors of the house of the Lord, and Samuel feared to show Eli the vision. So Samuel, probably one of his jobs was, he was the first guy up. He opened the doors of the tabernacle, or, you know, opened the curtains or whatever it was, so that people could come in and worship or pray or whatever. So, where was I? 16. And Eli called Samuel and said, Samuel, my son. And he answered, here am I. And he said, what is the thing that the Lord has said unto thee? I pray thee, hide it not from me. God do so to thee, and more also, if thou hide anything from me of all the things that he said unto thee. And Samuel told him every whit, and hid nothing from him. And he said, it is the Lord, let him do what seemeth him good. And that's pretty much, he resigned himself to the fact that that was God's judgment and nothing he could do about it at that point. And Samuel grew, and he continues to grow. And the Lord was with him and did let none of his words fall to the ground. Wow, that's a great thing. If you remember, this is really a proof that he was a prophet, that he was a man of God. Remember in Deuteronomy, one of the proofs of a prophet was that if he would say something, it would come to pass. So, and this is it. This is showing us that he's that man, that prophet, and that God is with him, and God's going to honor what he says. And he's going to talk to him and tell him what to say. And all the people, and all of Israel from Dan even to Beersheba knew that Samuel was established to be the prophet of the Lord. And, you know, he didn't have to do an ad campaign. He didn't have to promote himself, right? He didn't have to do any of those things. They didn't have television. They didn't have radios. They didn't have cell phones. They didn't have computers. But everybody in all of Israel from Dan to Beersheba knew that he was a prophet of the Lord. So I guess God got the word out. And the Lord appeared again in Shiloh, for the Lord revealed himself to Samuel in Shiloh by the word of the Lord. Woohoo. So That's how Samuel becomes a prophet. Okay. So, chapter 4. Yeah, we'll get through chapter 4. Okay. And the word of Samuel came to all Israel. Now Israel went out against the Philistines to battle and pitched beside Ebenezer. And the Philistines pitched in Aphek. And the Philistines put themselves in array against Israel. And when they joined battle, Israel was smitten before the Philistines. And they slew of the army in the field about 4,000 men. So Israel took a beating in the field. Well, what, they didn't go to God before they went to battle, did they? They just put on the helmets and got the shields and went out and they got beat. And when the people were come into the camp, the elders of Israel said, "Wherefore hath the Lord smitten us today before the Philistines? Let us fetch the ark of the covenant of the Lord out of Shiloh unto us, that when it cometh among us, it may save us out of the hand of our enemies." Now, did God tell them to do this?
No.
This is all their device. It's all what they have decided they should do. So the people sent to Shiloh that they might bring from thence the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord of Hosts, which dwelleth between the cherubims. And the two sons of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas, were there with the Ark of the Covenant of God. These guys have to agree to it because why? Because only the priests were supposed to carry the Ark. And who are the priests? Hophni and Phinehas, even though they don't know the Lord. But they're going to, you know, they're seeing an opportunity here to get power and to, you know, elevate themselves. And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, you know, human nature doesn't change a whole lot, does it? You know, here's these guys and they see an opportunity to gain power and wealth. And so they grab at it, whether it's the right thing to do or not. Anyway. Verse 5, "And when the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord came into the camp, all Israel shouted with a great shout, so that the earth rang again. And when the Philistines heard the noise of the shout, they said, 'What meaneth the noise of this great shout in the camp of the Hebrews?' And they understood that the Ark of the Lord was come into the camp. And the Philistines were afraid, for they said, 'God is come into the camp.'" Now, because the Ark is in the camp, does that mean God's in the camp?
No,
because it's just an object. It's just like, you know, when Moses made the brass serpent, you know, they made that an object of worship that later on Hezekiah destroyed because it had become like a relic. You know, it has historical significance maybe, but it doesn't have any spiritual significance. So, so the Philistines were afraid. They said, "God has come into the camp." And they said, "Woe unto us, for there hath not been such a thing heretofore." We've never heard of such a thing. This is a secret weapon. "Woe unto us, who shall deliver us out of the hand of these mighty gods? These are the gods that smote the Egyptians with all the plagues in the wilderness." Okay, here they say gods, but you know it was only one God, right? It was God Jehovah. El Shaddai, he's the one that delivered. But you know, they were these peoples that had many gods, right? So they thought, well, we have many gods, so they must have many gods. "Be strong and quit yourselves like men, O ye Philistines." Means be strong and act like men. "That ye be not servants unto the Hebrews as they have been to you. Quit yourselves, act like men and fight." And the Philistines fought Israel, and Israel was smitten, and they fled every man into his tent, and there was a very great slaughter, for there fell of Israel 30,000 footmen. So it was even worse than the first time. "And the ark of God was taken, and the two sons Eli and Hophni of Eli, Hophni and Phinehas were slain. And there ran a man of Benjamin out of the army and came to Shiloh the same day with his clothes rent and with the earth upon his head. means, you know, he came in and his clothes were ripped apart and his face was all dirty and he was bloody and a mess. And when he came to Eli, when he came, lo, Eli sat upon a seat by the wayside watching, for his heart trembled for the ark of God. And when the man came into the city and told it, all the city cried out. And when Eli heard the noise of crying, he said, what meaneth the noise of this tumult? And the man came in hastily and told Eli. Now Eli was 98 years old. It's pretty old. And his eyes were dim that he could not see. And the man said unto Eli, I am he that came out of the army, and I fled today out of the army. And he said, what is there done, my son? And the messenger answered and said, Israel has fled before the Philistines, and there hath been also a great slaughter among the people, and thy two sons also, Hophni and Phinehas, are dead in the ark of the ark of God is taken. So you couldn't get any more bad news for Eli than that. You know, the ark of God is gone, his two sons are dead, and Israel has taken a great defeat. You know, if you remember, he's the last of the judges, and the judges, they were sent to save Israel and prevent this stuff. And when they were walking with God and leading, you know, they did really well. And it came to pass when he made mention of the ark of God that he fell from off the seat backward by the side of the gate, and his neck brake, and he died. And he was an old man and heavy, and he had judged Israel 40 years. So, just want to say, you know, Eli was a man of God. He judged Israel for 40 years. He was a good man for many of those years, but did not stand for God against his sons. He was 58 when he began to judge. If he, you know, he was 98 when he died. It says he judged Israel for 40 years. That means he was 58 when he began, right? Simple arithmetic. So, he died. And his daughter-in-law, Phinehas' wife, was with child, near to be delivered. And when she heard the tidings that the ark of God was taken and that her father-in-law and her husband were dead, she bowed herself and travailed, for her pains came upon her. And about the time of her death, the woman that stood by her said unto her, fear not, for thou hast borne a son. But she answered not, neither did she regard it. And she named the child Ichabod, saying, the glory is departed from Israel. And, of course, Ichabod means there is no glory. That's what the word or the name Ichabod means. So she named the child Ichabod, saying, the glory is departed from Israel, because the ark of God was taken, and because of her father-in-law and her husband. And she said, the glory is departed from Israel, for the ark of God is taken. Wow. So, now, chapters 5 and 6 deal with the Philistines. They take the Ark of God and they take it to the city, and the Ark of God is there. And so, overnight, their statue, their god of Dagon, I think, falls. Next morning, they come in, they see it on the ground, they pick it up, they put it up. The next day, they come in, it's fallen again, but it's smashed, okay? So they say, oh, this is a problem. And then people start getting sick. They start getting hemorrhoids. And so they move it to another city. And the same thing happens. And then more people get sick, people die. They get overrun with mice. And they keep moving it to different cities in Philistia. I guess that's how you say it. Anyway, the cities of the Philistines. And finally, I say, we got to get rid of this thing. We'll bring it back to the Jews. We'll bring it back to Israel. So they make some golden hemorrhoids,
yes,
and some golden mice, and they put it with the Ark of the Covenant, and the golden mice and the hemorrhoids are supposed to be an offering of, you know, saying we're sorry. And they take it back.
Wow. But you can't make this stuff up, right?
So they bring it to Beth Shemesh, and in chapter 6, verse 20, the men of Beth Shemesh, who is able to stand before this holy Lord God, and to whom shall he go up from us? And they sent messengers to the inhabitants of Kirjath Jearim, saying, the Philistines have brought again the ark of the Lord. Come ye down and fetch it up to you. So that's what they do. They go and fetch it. Verse 1, chapter 7. Now we pick up the story with Samuel again. And the men of Kirjath Jearim came and fetched up the ark of the Lord and brought it into the house of Abinadab in the hill and sanctified Eleazar, his son, to keep the ark of the Lord, meaning to guard it, to watch over it. And it came to pass while the ark abode in Kirjath Jearim that the time was long, for it was 20 years, and all the house of Israel lamented after the Lord. So the Ark of the Covenant stayed in this guy's house for 20 years. And Samuel spake unto all the house of Israel, saying, if you do return unto the Lord with all your hearts, then put away the strange gods and the Ashtaroth from among you, and prepare your hearts unto the Lord, and serve him only, and he will deliver you out of the hands of the Philistines. Then the children of Israel did put away Balaam and Ashtaroth and served the Lord only. And Samuel said, gather all Israel to Mizpah, and I will pray for you unto the Lord. So, you know, he's taking control here. He's starting to really be the leader in Israel. And he reproved them, right? He called them. He says, look, you guys got to get rid of your false gods. And then God will take care of things for you. So he gathers all of Israel to Mizpah, and he says, I will pray for you unto the Lord. Meaning what? He's going to make intercession, just like it said, like Moses and Aaron did. And they gathered together in Mizpah and drew water and poured it out before the Lord and fasted on that day and said there, we have sinned against the Lord. And Samuel judged the children of Israel in Mizpah. And when the Philistines heard that the children of Israel were gathered together in Mizpah, the lords of the Philistines went up against Israel. And when the children of Israel heard this, they were afraid of the Philistines. And the children of Israel said to Samuel, cease not to cry unto the Lord our God for us, that he will save us out of the hand of the Philistines. And Samuel took a sucking lamb and offered it for a burnt offering wholly unto the Lord. And Samuel cried unto the Lord for Israel. And the Lord did what?
Heard him.
Because that Samuel was his guy. And he was a prophet. And when he made intercession, God heard him. What a great thing. You know, they finally get a little sense. And they ask Samuel for help. And then he does the rest, or God does the rest, really, because Samuel just obeyed. And as Samuel was offering up the burnt offering, the Philistines drew near to battle against Israel. But the Lord thundered with a great thunder on that day upon the Philistines and discomfited them. Means he, you know, really beat them up, crushed them, and they were smitten before Israel. Now, do you remember back in the beginning when we were reading Hannah's prayer? She said something about the thunder of God. Can't remember where it was. But she talked about God's thunder. That he would thunder. So I don't know what that thunder did, but it really shook up the Philistines. And then they were in confusion and everything, and Israel just wiped them out. And the men of Israel went out of Mizpah and pursued the Philistines and smote them until they came near Bethkar. Then Samuel took a stone and set it between Mizpah and Shen and called the name of it Ebenezer, saying, hitherto hath the Lord helped me. So Ebenezer means the stone of help. So this stone was a witness to them. You remember back in Joshua, he set up the stones of witness. He said, this will be a witness to you of what God's done for you. So Samuel set up a stone here, and it was the stone of help, and it was to remind them of how God gave them the victory over the Philistines. So the Philistines were subdued, and they came no more into the coast of Israel, and the hand of the Lord was against the Philistines all the days of Samuel. And the cities which the Philistines had taken from Israel were restored to Israel, from Ekron even unto Gath, and the coast thereof did Israel deliver out of the hands of the Philistines. And there was peace between Israel and the Amorites. And Samuel judged Israel all the days of his life. Which means what? He did a lot of work for a long, long period of time. That's quite a testimony to Samuel. He judged Israel. He ruled Israel all the days of his life. And he went out from year to year in the circuit to Bethel and to Gilgal and Mizpah and judged Israel in all those places. And his return was to Ramah, for there was his house. And there he judged Israel, and there he built an altar unto the Lord. And remember, that's where his parents came from, Ramah. Remember, Elkanah and Hannah were from Ramah. And he went back there and lived. That's where his house was. But he ruled Israel all the years of his life. So that's where we're going to stop tonight, because we only got a couple of minutes left. And I don't want to get into chapter 8 and then have to stop, you know, where it won't make sense. And it makes sense right there. Okay? And then we'll get 8 and 9. Okay, so... Yeah, we won't be here the next 2 weeks, so it'll be in 3 weeks. It'll be, I could give you the date. Okay, so the 30th will be the next Tuesday night fellowship. 3-0, July 30th. So you'll have to wait all that time to find out what happens with Samuel. Oh, man. Of course, you could read ahead if you wanted. What a great guy. What a great record. And it's a sad one for Eli, because he was a man of God. But he made a mistake. And, you know, God shows when people make mistakes as well as their victories, you know. And it's also a lesson for us, you know, to avoid those mistakes and avoid those pitfalls.
But it must have been a period, a long period of time. It wasn't like they did it once or twice.
Oh yeah, they were so, grown men, and they were doing it for years, and right. They were getting worse and worse and worse.
Right. So, and Eli saw.
Well, Eli saw it, and he knew, and then God told him apparently, and he didn't do anything about it. And then, you know, he sent a prophet, right? And he didn't listen then, and so then he told Samuel.
I just read this morning about what they were to do with the sacrifice. They were to burn the fat. Burn the fat, and so even if they ask you to burn the fat, you take it from them and take it
right.
From the horse. That was like totally
against the law. Because it was supposed to be a sweet smelling savor.
He stole the sweet smelling savor from them.
That's a great thing. Yeah. So, all right. Well, everybody blessed.
Yes.
Good. Yep. Okay. Well, we'll see you in 2 weeks. Father God, we thank you for this night, for blessing us, for. What a great record of a great man, and so much to learn from that. We thank you, Father, for just allowing us to have so much knowledge. And we just thank you for your love and your grace abounding in our lives. In the name of Jesus Christ, we pray. Amen.